welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to meet the teams who prepare for disasters across our state and check in with our County Veteran Service Officer. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
When people think about the military, they often think of service members deployed overseas. What is unique about the National Guard is our additional role at home. During Super Bowl 52, more than 450 soldiers and airmen supported security operations and law enforcement agencies. In 2017, more than 110 soldiers and airmen were activated to Texas, Florida, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands to aid in hurricane relief efforts. In June of 2017, the Minnesota National Guard supported the Minnesota State Patrol in locating three missing paddlers in the Boundary Waters canoe area. And in December 2017, our soldiers opened armories in several communities to shelter people during extreme cold weather. With a force of more than 13,000 strong, we are proud to serve the great state of Minnesota and our nation.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. If I said at the opening of the show, we're going to talk about our annual Homeland Security Emergency Management Show. And here to join us today to engage in that discussion is Joe Kelly, who is the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Director Kelly, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be back with you again.
Sure. It doesn't seem like a year has passed, but we do this every spring.
It seems like I blinked my eyes and we're back doing another annual show.
Another annual show. And, of course, we get some of our radio stations up to Camp Ripley in between the show, and you give them a little briefing about all the great work that they do at Homeland Security and all the partners, all the agencies that you partner with all over Minnesota. There's a lot of them, aren't there?
There are a lot of them, and you've done a great job of building that network out, because that's where the people that we serve, they live across Minnesota, all corners, all borders, and they listen to local radio, and the Minnesota Military Radio Hour network is now very widely spread, and that's where people go when they need information when we got emergencies and disasters. So thank you for that.
And sir, you were with the Minnesota National Guard when this all started. Can you believe it's we're 10 years in and we have 58 stations?
Congratulations.
Sir, there's been a lot of partners and a lot of help. I want to talk a little bit about Homeland Security Emergency Management. We heard the Adjutant General talk about the Super Bowl that was here recently, and I know that you were in a special place during the Super Bowl over in St. Paul. Homeland Security Emergency Management has a Special Operations Center.
We do. We have a facility. It's in downtown St. Paul. We call it the State Emergency Operations Center, and that's where we gather all of our state agency and federal government partners when things happen or when we're dealing with a special event like that. What's newsworthy this year is that we are working with the legislature, with Governor Wall's help, to get a new facility built. New State Emergency Operations Center. So we're excited about that. The one we have is not in the most ideal location, and we need a little bit of room. And what we say all the time is that's a one of a kind, no fail facility, and it needs to be there when our local communities call for help.
And, sir, technology changes very rapidly, and I'm sure that a major upgrade there is going to help speed things up and help you to take care of all the people in Minnesota when a disaster occurs.
It will make a big difference. You're absolutely right about technology and our ability to maintain situational awareness, understand what's happening across our state, and be able to communicate with everybody inside Minnesota and outside is really dependent on that technology today, and that takes a facility. And so we're excited that the governor included us in his bonding bill, and we're pleased with the support we're getting from the legislature so far in the process.
We're speaking with Joe Kelly, the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety on Minnesota Military Radio. Director, I know that during your military career, and you retired as a Brigadier General, and ever since that with Homeland Security, you've had an opportunity to go up to Camp Ripley. It's a fantastic training facility for a lot of reasons, but Homeland Security has an office up there, too.
We do, Tom. We have a home up at Camp Ripley, which for us and for our clients, for our customers, is located perfectly in the center of the state. We have a facility that we co-manage with the National Guard called the Emergency Management Training Center. We use that facility to conduct training classes, to train new emergency managers at the county, tribal government, local level. And that's where we do a lot of our exercising, our rehearsing of the plans that we need to be proficient at if and when something happens.
And Director Kelly, it's how important is it for you to know some of those people and some of those agencies from all over the state before the emergency happens?
It's absolutely essential, Tom. You know, when you need a friend, there's no time to make friends. And the same thing is true with the professional relationships that, that we have to have with local our local partners. When bad things happen, when you have a tornado, you have a flood, you have a fire, you have a hazardous materials incident, things happen really fast, and people are communicating quickly, and we just don't have time to get to know each other. And the better we understand each other, the more efficient we'll be.
And, sir, we've got some special guests in the studio with us today from the Army Corps of Engineers, St. Paul District, and the Minnesota National Guard, and we're going to talk a little bit about how you cooperate with those two groups as well as other groups. But the one thing that I wanted to ask you about was if there is an emergency somewhere in Minnesota, who's in charge? Is it the local authorities?
That's exactly right. We have a phrase in our business that all disasters are local, and that means that local first responders, local elected officials, they're in charge. They're responsible to their communities and to their people. We are there to help them provide resources, technical advice, assistance, but it's a home game for them, and we're there to help them.
So you at Emergency Homeland Security Emergency Management are monitoring floods and blizzards and tornadoes and all those kind of things. And if you see something occur, then do you make contact with the local authorities? And at that point, do you ask them what type of help do you need?
Well, I have six regional program coordinators, so we've divided the state into six geographic regions. They are really that first call for help. They're also, to use an old military guy's term, they're my scouts. So they're my eyes and ears out there. When things start happening, we try to stay out of the way, but as important as anything, we really need to understand what's happening and try to anticipate if they're gonna have any needs.
And then you try to coordinate those efforts between all the various agencies, whether it is the Corps or the Guard or MnDOT or whoever might have the assets and the people necessary to help with the emergency.
Exactly. That's one of our primary roles, Tom, during an emergency, during a disaster, is to kind of be that central point where people call for help. We've gathered all our friends and partners around, and we do that coordination, that synchronization, and that communications to make sure that we can get the help out to those communities that need it.
And sir, one of the stories that kind of sticks with me was a few years back, there was some flooding in Duluth. And after the flooding subsided, they were looking for some dump trucks and some heavy equipment to try to put their roads back together. And as I recall, MnDOT had the equipment necessary, and you were able to arrange for them to come in and after the fact sort out who's going to pay for the costs of providing that relief effort.
Yep, and we have a lot of state agencies. Of course, we have our good friends from the National Guard with us here on the show today. But we've got state agencies like the Department of Transportation, Department of Health, Minnesota State Patrol, and others that have the people and the knowledge and the equipment to help local communities. During response, we need to figure out how to get that help to the local level as fast as we can. We'll sort it out afterwards when we have a little more calm in the phase we call recovery to figure out how to get things paid for.
And you also work closely with the governor because in some cases he's the authority to call out such as the Minnesota National Guard. And he also gives you some backing in terms of who's going to pay for all of this after the fact.
Well, it's interesting you talk about who's going to pay for this, because right now one of the things that with Governor Wall's help and his support is moving on a very fast track due to legislation is $30 million in disaster assistance money for local communities. Last year was a very busy year in Minnesota. We had 10 major disasters. Two involved the federal government, the president declaring a disaster and authorizing federal assistance. And then Governor Walz used his authority to authorize state disaster assistance 8 times. So we had about $100 million worth of natural disaster damage in Minnesota last year that impacted 82 counties and five tribal governments. So that having those resources available when we need them is important, and we deeply appreciate the support of both the governor and the legislature.
Sir, I would think the last thing you'd want to deal with when there's an emergency and you need equipment and people and resources is for somebody to sit there and say, I've got what you need, but I don't have any money. I can't afford to send them. So it's important to be ready from that standpoint, isn't it?
Exactly. And that is a priority. As we've seen with this current bill moving through, this tends to be very much a nonpartisan issue. There's no Republican or Democratic disasters. They're incidents that happen in Minnesota, and everybody gathers together to work together and get help to communities right away.
But, sir, it's got to be rewarding to be sitting in a position where if there is a disaster and there's some resources necessary, you can have an impact and deliver them and take care of the people of Minnesota in as fast as possible.
It is very rewarding, and probably the overwhelming emotion that I have is gratitude. Grateful that we live in a state that takes care of its own, and that we have the relationships we have with local governments, and that we have the great state and federal partners that we do.
Director, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the commander of the St. Paul District Corps of Engineers, Army Corps of Engineers, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're talking about the agencies that work together across the state of Minnesota to help prepare for disasters and react to them. And my co-host today has been Joe Kelly, who is the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. And, Director, we've got another great guest on this segment, and that is Colonel Carl Jansen, who is the commander of the St. Paul District Army Corps of Engineers. St. Paul District covers most of Minnesota, the western half of Wisconsin, northeastern half of North Dakota, and small portions of northeastern South Dakota and northeastern Iowa. It's a big district. And, Colonel, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tom. Great to be with you again.
Colonel, this time of year, we always like to have you on along with Director Kelly and talk about what happened over the winter and how that's going to impact us in the spring. I've heard that there's some ice dams and some flooding in southern Minnesota already in past weeks. And, of course, we always have to talk about the Red River Valley. How are we doing, Colonel?
Well, last time I talked to you in July, we were dealing with high water on the Mississippi River, and that continued through the rest of the summer and all the way through the fall and winter. We had one of the wettest winters on record, and that high water has presented some challenges through the winter with the ice jam flooding on the Mississippi River, but then also as we look ahead into the spring with saturated ground conditions and what that could mean with a spring runoff.
So are we expecting an average year, above average year? You've got some hot spots you're worried about, sir?
So the National Weather Service does routine forecasting, and there's certainly a high potential in most of our basins, Red River, the Headwaters area of Minnesota, and the main stem Mississippi south of Minneapolis for some major flooding potential.
Now, Colonel, are there ways that you can manipulate some of that, like from the reservoirs and releasing water or capturing water? Are there ways you can help mediate some of that damage?
Definitely. We do have a system of reservoirs both on the Red River system and also in northern Minnesota on the portion of the Mississippi above Minneapolis. These provide mostly localized flood risk reduction. Right now, we're in the middle of doing a spring drawdown, so we release water in a controlled manner and build some of the storage capacity in, so when we do have the runoff, that reservoir can collect all of that, and we can withhold it for a period of time and release it in a controlled manner. It only gives a certain degree of flood risk reduction to the area.
But control as much as you can.
Right. We try to do as much as we can.
Now, sir, it seems like the last few weeks we've had a series of freeze-melt. At night it freezes over again. Does that slow down the melt, and is that helpful?
These are exactly the conditions that we hope for, to have a nice, slow, controlled melt. It's definitely been helpful with recent weeks with these warmer temperatures and also a very low amount of precipitation. And if that continues, that'll just help drop the flood risk as we go into the spring melt.
Director Kelly, it seems like last year, 2019, that there was a lot of flooding and too much water, and the ground didn't have a chance to dry out. You had a lot of hot spots you were watching last year. They have to come into play when we're taking a look at this spring.
Absolutely. What happened last summer and last fall, as the Colonel mentioned, has really just teed us up to be at an elevated flood risk again. We got, as Carl said, we got high soil moisture and high river flows. We could get lucky. And the thing that we need to get lucky on, because we have been very fortunate with the melt so far, is that we don't have a lot of precipitation, or we don't have a lot of precipitation at one time. But it really is just a continuation of the pretty significant risk we experienced all last year.
And Colonel, we're here. It's March. Seems like we're getting an early spring. You've got a lot of great employees over at the St. Paul District. How do you put them to work when it comes springtime and to react to the problems around the state?
Well, I think disaster response is certainly one of our top mission areas. This is a no-fail mission. It's an opportunity for our employees to step up and serve their fellow citizens. They take that very seriously. We have to be ready. One of the ways we do that is through our reservoir operations, but also training our teammates. We get a lot of new teammates in each year, and getting them ready to go out into the basins and interact with local officials so they can predict what some of the impacts would be in case we need to step up and support those areas. In addition to that, we take a look at the materials that we stockpile, sandbags, plastic, and pumps, in case we need to provide those in a very major flood event.
And, sir, as I recall, last year, due to all that flooding, the Mississippi River was challenging to navigate. Are you expecting problems again this year, or really don't know yet?
It was a very difficult year last year when navigation had a shortened navigation season for the shippers, which has a ripple effect on the local economy. The potential is certainly there for that. This year, I think we're postured a little bit better going into the spring. Our big indicator is the ice on Lake Pepin. We do weekly ice measurements, and so far this year we've had thinner ice with a little bit of less coverage. And so hopefully that means if things keep up, we can open the navigation season at a normal time.
Director Kelly, it seems like you've always got a really great partner in the St. Paul District Corps of Engineers there to help with all of the issues every spring.
We certainly do, and their expertise in dealing with waterways, dams, levees, those types of things is actually indispensable, because in Minnesota, our number one natural disaster risk is flooding. And the technical guidance and expertise and assistance they provide the local communities, the equipment and supplies that they provide are absolutely essential. So they're one of our best and most reliable partners as we face our most persistent threat here in Minnesota, and that's flooding.
Thank you, sir. We're speaking with Joe Kelly, Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and Colonel Carl Jansen from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by the Minnesota National Guard and talk about how they pitch in to help whenever there's a disaster here in Minnesota. Please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. To Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, my co-host has been Joe Kelly, who's the Director of Homeland Security Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. That's a long title, sir. And we've been talking to Carl Jansen. Colonel is a commander of the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And we've got another guest going to join us in a moment. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
Minnesota winters can be beautiful, and many of us have learned to enjoy the season. But for those who are homeless, Minnesota winters can also be deadly. Hundreds of our military veterans across Minnesota continue to struggle with homelessness. In 2019, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs was able to house 536 formerly homeless veterans in safe and secure housing. That is the highest number yet since our initiative began in 2014. During these cold winter days, we are asking landlords to open their doors to homeless veterans. Landlords, I ask asks that you please contact HousingLink at www.housinglink.org to learn more. If you know of a veteran facing homelessness, please call 1-888-LINK-VET for help. Our goal is to become the fourth state in the country to effectively end veterans' homelessness, especially during these Minnesota winters. I would like to thank our 55 veterans homeless partners for their support and continued efforts to effectively end homelessness.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. My co-host today has been Director Joe Kelly from Homeland Security Emergency Management. And, sir, one of the things we didn't get to in the last segment was flood insurance. Springtime was kind of flood time in certain parts of the state of Minnesota. And hopefully all of our residents have flood insurance and have insurance to cover any backups that might come into the house.
No, that's a really important topic, Tom, so I'm glad we got back to it. We're talking to Colonel Jansen about what communities do and state and local government to get ready for flooding. It's just as important to talk about what us, what we as individual property owners need to do, and that's have adequate insurance. And one of those is flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program with FEMA. And just as important is to take a look at your homeowner's policy and make sure that you have a rider or you're covered for sewer or something. Pump backup or water overflow. If the water comes from outside your home, your normal homeowner's insurance is not going to cover it unless you have that rider on it. So the federal government and the state government make a presumption that we all have adequate insurance coverage, and flood insurance is something that all Minnesotans should have. We live in the land of 10,000 lakes. That means there's a lot of water. Whether you live in a special flood hazard area, a floodplain or not, you should consider having flood insurance.
So for all our listeners, call your insurance agent today, because you might have to have a 30-day period before that's effective. And we're coming into the season where problems can happen, and we hope you all have great coverage. Director, we've got a guest now from the Minnesota National Guard. It's Lieutenant Colonel Scott Rowiter, who is Director of Operations. Colonel Rowiter, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. It's been a few years.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Tom, for having me on.
Sir, I want to talk a little bit about our Minnesota National Guard, as opposed to the reserves, as a dual mission. They've got a federal mission if they're called out by the DO or from the Department of Defense, and they go over to Kuwait and Afghanistan, and we cover that a lot on this radio show. But then there's a state mission. Unlike the reserves, the Minnesota National Guard can be called out by the governor and go on state missions. And what type of missions does the Guard get asked to deal with?
Well, Tom, there's a variety of different types of missions that we could support in. The ones that we most support often is the flood response, and that could be doing some levee patrol, traffic control points, or providing resources such as generators. We do wildfire response in the springtime when there is wildfire danger and there are fires and there's a need. We do have helicopters that can help support the DNR in some of that response. Winter storm response, that's another big one we do, where we can open up armories for shelter for stranded motorists or actually conduct some search and rescue operations to help save stranded motorists on highways. And then we do typical responses with our 55th Civil Support Team, where they do chemical, biological, radiological, nuclear, and explosive matters type responses with the state departments.
And sir, we had a good example. They were on a few years back and told us a story where they were sweeping the stadium, a football stadium, and there was a gentleman in one of the suites that had a medical procedure the day before with some radioactive isotopes, and the civil support team found him among 55 or 60,000 people and said, "What have you been doing lately?" And so for me, and I think for the general public, to know that you have that capability and can protect us, that's pretty tremendous.
Yes, sir. It sure is. And, you know, the equipment and the training that they have is very sophisticated, and it's well done by that team, and it helps us all be able to enjoy those events and support those national types events.
Director Kelly, what does it take to call up the Minnesota National Guard and ask for help?
Well, at the end of that process, we'll start there. It takes the governor to issue an emergency executive order and for him to direct that the adjutant general place the soldiers and equipment of the National Guard into the service of the state. Starts at the local level with a local community being not having sufficient resources to deal with what they have in, at their disposal, goes to the county sheriff to kind of vet and make sure that they've exhausted their ability to help themselves. And then it comes to our agency, and we work in very close consultation. My commissioner, John Harrington, works with the Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen, to come together and make a recommendation to the governor about whether he should issue an executive order and put those soldiers into the service of the state. But it's not a local decision. It goes to the commander-in-chief when our National Guard is at home, and that's the governor.
So, Colonel, what happens when the governor has decided that he's going to activate some Minnesota National Guard troops, being soldiers or airmen? What do you do first? How do you go about dealing with the situation?
Well, Tom, the interesting part is we're well connected with Homeland Security and Emergency Management, and we typically know well in advance if there is a potential need that's going to occur. So we get to do a lot of prior planning and parallel planning with the state. We have liaison officers that are out in the six regions, the six HSCM regions, that are coordinating with those regional HSCM personnel. And then we have liaison officers that are at the State Emergency Operations Center that are all feeding information to us, allowing us to conduct that parallel planning, get the units ready that are potentially going to respond, and then when we receive the governor's executive order, we can respond in a very timely manner.
So it's a question of what's the emergency, where is the emergency, what kind of help is needed, and then what units might be available that can provide that support.
Yes, sir. Typically, we just ask for what task needs to be completed, and then we provide the state with what resources we can provide to help accomplish that task.
And how fast can you move?
Well, when we have our National Guard reaction forces, we could typically respond within 12 to 24 hours. The other units might take anywhere from 1 to 2 days for a response. But if there is a need that's quicker than that, as long as we've been planning that ahead of time, like we're talking about, we're getting ahead of the actual tasking that's coming in, that can help expedite the response.
Director Kelly, the thing that we talk about seems like every year is the flood issues and the flood situation up in the Red River Valley. Minnesota National Guard and I think the North Dakota National Guard have probably been asked to help up there quite often.
I would say if you look back through the state mission logs in the Minnesota National Guard history books, you're going to find Red River Valley flood response probably at the top of that list. The good news is those are local hometown units with soldiers that live in those communities. They know the communities, they know the rivers, they know what needs to be done. So that allows them to be very effective and efficient. And they have, as we've talked about in the first segment, they have the relationship with the local folks to do a good job and help those communities in need.
And Colonel, with a repeat mission like that, you've got to have soldiers that have done it before. They know what to expect, and they're helping their neighbors and in some cases maybe helping their families.
And that's correct. We have units that are up in the Red River Valley that have completed this mission year in and year out. And every year we do tabletop exercises that put our units and our leadership in coordination with all the state planners and agencies so that we're prepared to go when the duty's called.
Sir, have you been activated for one of these state missions?
Tom, I haven't personally been like out on a levee or doing one of those traffic control points, but I have served as the Joint Operations Center officer in charge from 2011 to 2013, where I had several opportunities to plan and help execute these missions.
Director?
Yeah, Tom, you mentioned earlier, again, it's about the third time we've talked about relationships. Colonel Roweeder is very familiar to us and the communities across Minnesota, so we're very glad to have him back in this role at a higher rank and with more responsibility, because we know him and he knows us and very familiar with how these processes go. So that gives me a lot of confidence for what lies ahead.
And Colonel, I'm kind of asking the same question again, but if I'm one of your soldiers and I live up in that part of the state and I'm called out to help my family and my neighbors and my friends with some flood control issues, kind of feel pretty good about serving in the Minnesota National Guard.
Absolutely, Tom. Serving our local citizens is one of the best things that we do. That's one of the privileges that we have of serving in the National Guard is we get those opportunities and we're all honored to do it.
And so I think our listeners can be happy today to know that the Minnesota National Guard, the Army Corps of Engineers, and Homeland Security are all working together and planning for what might happen, including things that maybe happen all too often, and so that we can be ready and we can take care of our citizens here in Minnesota. Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to tidy things up and talk about something that Director Kelly and I like to talk about every year. If you see something, say something, and we're going to explain that when we come back. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. Our guests today have been Joe Kelly, the Director of Homeland Security Emergency Management of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, Colonel Carl Jansen from the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the commander over there, and Lieutenant Colonel Scott Rowader from the Minnesota National Guard. And Director Kelly, one of the things that that I always like to ask you about this time of this annual show is see something, say something. Can you explain what that means?
I can, Tom, and we've talked a lot about the emergency management part of our business, and this is about the homeland security part of our business, and that is we need all Minnesotans, we need all Americans to be vigilant, and if they see something in their community that does not look right, that looks like it could be a threat or a danger to the community and the people that live in it, they need to say something. So if you see something, say something, pick up the phone, call local law enforcement and report it, and let them look into it. The citizens that we serve are our first and best line of defense when it comes to understanding what's happening in our communities.
Director, what about the person that sees something that seems a little odd and they're feeling kind of, you know, I don't know if I want to bother the authorities with that. It might not be anything. You've got some examples where that happened, and they prevented some big problems.
Yeah, people, if you think you might feel bad because you don't want to bother someone, think how bad you will feel if what you saw turned into be a very serious threat to our community. And there are all kinds of stories where someone, a couple years back down in southern Minnesota, a woman looked out her kitchen window when she was preparing dinner and saw something next door that didn't quite look right, asked the local law enforcement to look into it, and what they found was a young man who was making improvised explosive devices in the back shed.
And law enforcement wants to do their job.
They want to do their job.
Give them a call.
Yep, let them sort that out.
Colonel Rowader, along those lines, you've got all kinds of soldiers and airmen all over the state. And I remember the story of one of your medics, I think, observed a car accident one day. And before even the law enforcement or anyone got on the site, they were able to provide first aid and take care of things. You've got a lot of people all over Minnesota. And when it comes to see something, say something, they can be an effective force in that manner as well.
They sure can, Tom. One of our commander critical information requirements to the Adjutant General is any suspicious activity that we notice, whether it's around our armories or if it's elsewhere throughout the state. And it's amazing when we push that down to our soldiers and we tell them that when you see a small piece of a puzzle, sometimes when we report that up, you put those small pieces together, it generates the bigger picture of things that are happening. So when we have a situation like that, the soldiers report that. We push that through our force protection channels, and they communicate that with the state agencies, and you know, we can provide that kind of intelligence to the state for potential events.
Very good, sir. Colonel Jansen, I want to come to you. One of the things that in business and in personal life that I don't like is surprises. And I'm sure in your business at the St. Paul District Army Corps of Engineers, you don't like them either. But I know that your people have been out working with agencies all over Minnesota asking them, what do you think is coming up? What do we need to be prepared for?
Right, Tom. This is one of the best ways we can get ready, and it's about taking advantage of the time we have available to strengthen the partnerships that we already have. Every partner that comes to the table in disaster response has different capabilities, and if we can work together with unity of effort, it speeds up the response and also makes it more effective. I think for us, the public certainly expects that we operate that way, and they certainly deserve it. And by interacting with the local, state, federal, tribal interagencies, we're able to step up and deliver that.
So to the greater extent, you know that there could be a problem. It helps you to be prepared if and when it happens.
That's right. We can think through what might happen. We can kind of pre-coordinate our response. And then we are certainly prepared to act when needed.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Director Kelly, I want to come back to you. There's a lot of nonsense in the news these days, but one of the things that everybody seems to be overreacting to is the coronavirus. I know that the state of Minnesota and Homeland Security has plans. If that becomes an epidemic, you're ready.
We are ready, and one of the messages that with our our friends at the Department of Health and local hospitals and the healthcare system is we're trying to tell people don't be worried. Just be prepared and be ready. And some of the best advice is if you're sick, stay home. Cover your cough, cover your sneeze, wash your hands well. It sounds so basic, but that's how we all can contribute to preventing that from spreading. But understand that if, and it's probably a matter of when, we have a case or cases in Minnesota, Minnesotans should be very confident that our hospitals and clinics, long-term care facilities and others are well prepared to deal with this and keep it under control. But we all have to do our part as individuals. If you're sick, stay home.
Sir, we just got about 30 seconds left, but I think the message today that I learned and relearn every year when we talk about this is we should feel fortunate in Minnesota. There's a lot of agencies working together to be prepared. If there's a disaster or a problem, we can put people and assets and resources to work on those problems quickly.
We are absolutely blessed to live in Minnesota and have the strong communities that we have and have the good people that are working to be prepared and to help everybody when something goes wrong, whether it's a flood or a health crisis. Minnesota is a great place to live because we're good when times are tough.
Thank you, sir. And gentlemen, thanks for joining us again today. That was Director Joe Kelly from Homeland Security Emergency Management, Colonel Carl Jansen from the St. Paul District U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and Lieutenant Colonel Scott Roeder from the Minnesota National Guard. Joining me now is Lori Brooks, who has been the Becker County Veteran Service Officer since 2006. She served in the United States Army as a nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare specialist, and she's been on the show many times in the past. Lori, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Lori, we thought it'd be kind of fun to talk to you today since March is Women's History Month, and you've got a lot of history serving in the military, and your family served in the history in the military, and you're a Gold Star mother in addition.
Yeah, there's a big family. We call it the family business.
And Lori, in the 10 years that we've been on the radio, we've seen nothing but more and more and more women serving in the military. Are you seeing a lot of those women coming in to see you for some of their benefits as a County Veteran Service Officer?
We are. We're now seeing that there's more than 15%. The active duty women are increasing. That demographic is increasing. And so, conversely, women veterans are also growing in the veteran world. And just in the CVSO world, when I started 14 years ago, there were probably about 10 women veteran service officers. And at last count, I think there was an excess of 40 female CVSOs in the state. So I think that gets the face out there. It makes it recognizable so women veterans feel comfortable coming into our offices.
And one of the other good things that we've learned on the program is the VA Medical Center here in Minneapolis has been expanding the women's clinics, and they're building a new women's clinic, and our women veterans have to feel good about all the changes.
Right, and that's part of the growing awareness that we're making in the VA and in the Department of Defense is saying that we want the same type of benefits, just an equitable, you know, men and women are different. And so we just want the same access to programs as our male counterparts.
So, Lori, this month, Women's History Month, gives us a reason to realize that not only to realize, but to celebrate the achievements of women and look critically at equality and opportunities for women. And I know that you served in the military and your family served, and back in 2006 you had a real strong reason for applying for this job so you could help other veterans and other women veterans.
Right. My husband is a military retiree. I met him in the service, and our oldest son went into the service and he was a combat medic, and he was killed in 2005. And that's when I was first introduced. We had just retired and moved back to Minnesota, and I was introduced to the county veteran service officer in Becker County. And it went a long way. He helped us out navigate all the waters, and as it would have it, he retired the next year. And I thought, what a better way to serve my fellow veterans and fellow Gold Star families is to go into that field and bring awareness to all of the benefits that are available to those groups of people. And as luck would have it, they hired me, and I always say, have the best job in the world.
Lori, are some of the top challenges that our women veterans have been facing, are they being addressed? Are things getting better?
They are getting better. I think one of the big challenges that we have is that women usually aren't identified at the face as being veterans. My husband and I are both veterans, and most people recognize him as the veteran and not me. It's just one of those things that society doesn't recognize. And now that we're getting the word out, more people are apt to say, "Oh, thank you. You're a veteran also." And I think that was probably the big hurdle that we have to jump, and that's being addressed now with all the different programs.
Lori, we just got about a minute left. What would you have to say to our listeners who are women veterans about County Veteran Service Officers? Come see us.
Come see us. Even if you don't think you're eligible for any benefits, go in and talk to them. There are so many changes that are happening in the VA and so many programs that are out there for you. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs actually has a women veterans coordinator that they've hired. Go in and see them. There are programs there for you, specifically for you, and we are growing and trying to bring awareness. If we don't have it, let us know so we can go forward with legislation, try to get those gaps filled. So please come and see us.
Very good. Lori, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Lori Brook, the Becker's County Veteran Service Officer on Minnesota Military Radio. We're just about out of time. If you're a Minnesota veteran and would like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Director Joe Kelly from Homeland Security Emergency Management, Colonel Carl Jansen from the St. Paul Army Corps of Engineers, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Roeder from the Minnesota National Guard, Lori Brook, our County Veteran Service Officer, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we hear the latest from Minnesota's Military Museum and get an update from Women's Veterans Program. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.